Hey everyone, I'm Thanos Davelis, and welcome back to The Greek Current, a podcast by the Hellenic American Leadership Council and Kathimerini, where we highlight the top stories of the day every afternoon with analysis from guest experts, policymakers, journalists, and HALC staff. Turkish President Erdogan and the de facto ruler of the United Arab Emirates, Abu Dhabi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Zayed, spoke on the phone earlier this week in the latest sign of a possible thaw between the regional rivals. Turkey and the UAE have been at odds over Ankara's support for the Muslim Brotherhood and on opposing sides on a number of issues, from the conflict in Libya to the Eastern Mediterranean and the Horn of Africa. Journalist Amberin Zaman joins The Greek Current to look into the call between the leaders of Turkey and the United Arab Emirates and overall relations between the two countries. We also discuss the role played by the Iraqi Kurdistan Region President Barzani in facilitating these talks. Amberin Zaman is a staff correspondent for Al Monitor covering the Middle East with a particular focus on Syria, Iraq, and Turkey. Prior to Al Monitor, Amberin Zaman served as The Economist's Turkey correspondent. Amberin, welcome back on The Greek Current. It's great to have you with us again.
Well, it's always great to be with you, Thanos.
Amberin, what do we know about the contents of the call between Turkey's president and the crown prince of the United Arab Emirates, which seemed unexpected given the animosity that we've seen between the two countries?
Well, we don't know a lot. What we do know is that the Turkish presidency said that they talked about, you know, future investments, the UAE investing in the Turkish economy. That seemed to be something that was emphasized. But we can easily guess what else was discussed. And one of those issues would certainly have had to have been this fugitive Turkish mobster who's been sitting in the United Emirates and producing all these videos targeting Erdogan's government, accusing them of very serious crimes like rape, murder, drug trafficking, and the like. And we know that Erdogan was obviously very interested in getting this man silenced, and he has indeed been silenced pretty much.
Given the tensions between the two countries and the fact that they are on opposing sides on a number of issues, from the conflict in Libya to the Eastern Mediterranean and the Horn of Africa, what is pushing the two countries toward discussions and possible normalization of relations? Are these steps taking place out of the blue?
No, they're not taking place out of the blue at all. And in fact, I think it would be wrong to characterize that phone call as a surprise, because a week or so prior, the National Security Advisor of the United Arab Emirates, a very important figure, was in Ankara and he was received by Erdogan. Normally, you know, in protocol terms, it wouldn't have been Erdogan who would be seeing him, but that's who he got to see, which points to Turkey's keenness to mend this relationship. And it is part of a broader effort on the part of Turkey to mend ties with all of these countries with which it has pretty hostile relations. And those countries are obviously the United Arab Emirates, but also Egypt and Israel. And Turkey has been reaching out to all of these countries. And next week, there will be a second round of talks between Turkey and Egyptian officials to see how they can move relations forward, because the two countries still do not have ambassadors in place. So I think so far Turkey has been making some gestures. As far as we know, they've expelled various Muslim Brotherhood figures who had residence in Turkey. And so I'm guessing that the Egyptians are probably coming to the table with further demands, particularly with regard to the Muslim Brotherhood presence in Turkey. And as far as the UAE is concerned, I think the UAE also understands that there's a new world out there with Trump gone, and this, of course, applies to Turkey as well. And during that period when Trump was around, you know, both countries engaged in quite a bit of military adventurism and pushed the limits of how far they would be allowed to go. So you saw Turkey flexing its muscles in the Eastern Mediterranean. You saw the UAE leading this embargo on Qatar, the two countries on opposite sides, as you said, in Libya. And I think now countries are sort of taking stock of this new situation. For Turkey, obviously, there's an effort to end its isolation, as I said. So, you know, it also makes quite a bit of sense for the UAE, which has a lot of money, you know, it has this sovereign wealth fund, billions of dollars. And the idea is to try and secure the United Arab Emirates' economic future in a post-oil economy. And so they're looking to invest that money here and there, and Turkey is a lucrative country for that investment, and it's been articulated, in fact, by the head of the Sovereign Wealth Fund, who said they were looking at the health industry, the food industry in Turkey, which is very developed, among others, to bring some money in, several billions of dollars, in fact, he said.
Amberin, given the range of issues where the UAE and Turkey are at loggerheads, what would the UAE expect to see from Turkey in order to move forward with more substantial talks in this relationship?
Well, I don't think that there is that much that Turkey can actually bring to the table per se beyond, you know, not being hostile through its media and its rhetoric, and normalizing ties with Egypt. And I'm sure further down the road, you know, the UAE is at the forefront of these countries that want Syria brought back into the diplomatic fold. So I think there perhaps you may also see the UAE perhaps nudging Turkey in that direction. So maybe on that count. And of course, both countries have to deal with Iran, which is right across the water for the UAE and a neighbor for Turkey. So, you know, as I said, in this changing environment with the Americans sort of putting the Middle East on the back burner, there is definitely incentive there for the UAE to also want to end this hostility. But that's not to say that, you know, either country will give up on its ambitions. But I think that right now in Libya, the conflict has now kind of subsided. There's something of a stalemate, shall we say. And so maybe going forward, it's in all of their interests, and that's certainly being encouraged by the Europeans, by the United States, that they all need to work together now.
Amberin, in your report on El Monitor, you noted that this call between the leaders of Turkey and the United Arab Emirates was a result of the personal intervention of Iraqi Kurdistan Region President Barzani. How instrumental was his role in helping set up this call?
Before I answer that question, I should have mentioned, obviously, that for the United Arab Emirates, their main concern, obviously, is Turkey's support for the Muslim Brotherhood. But everything that Turkey's been doing to appease Egypt obviously ticks that box for the UAE, too. So when you asked what would the UAE expect of Turkey, it's pretty much what Egypt is asking of Turkey. So, you know, it's double whammy, really, for them that Turkey's taking these steps. To get back to your question about Nechevan Barzani, the president of the Kurdistan region of Iraq, yes, he did indeed play a facilitating, mediating role. You will recall that he traveled to the UAE on June 12th, and on June 13th, UAE officials pretty much, I'd say, raided the hotel where this mobster is staying and sort of took him away and pretty much told him to stop making the videos, and he did stop, and then he started just tweeting. So that was already, you know, quite a bit of a gain, I'd say, for Erdogan, because many more people watch YouTube than they look at Twitter. So already his influence, his impact was shrinking. And now, as we understand things, they are now talking about his extradition, though the mobster insists that he has a company in the UAE and has a 3-year residence permit, so they can't cancel that. But, you know, this is the Middle East. They can pretty much do whatever they want. Insofar as Barzani's role again, he has excellent personal relations with Erdogan, a very special relationship. And Erdogan trusts him. At the same time, Barzani and his broader family, the Barzani clan, certainly the more prominent ones, they all have very good relations with the Emiratis, with the Emirati royal family, with the sheikhs. They have property there, business there. So they have a very good, you know, rapport with these people. So it made perfect sense that someone that Erdogan trusts so much would actually serve as an emissary, which is precisely according to my sources, and they're very solid sources, and no one has denied that this took place, that Nechevan Barzani did actually, apparently, very successfully mediate between the two. He certainly accelerated whatever rapprochement was already in place through his intervention.
Amberin, can you tell us a little bit more about that special relationship between Barzani and Erdogan and the Iraqi Kurdistan region and Turkey?
Absolutely. Well, Nechervan Barzani was the prime minister of Iraqi Kurdistan for long years before becoming president. He's the nephew of Masoud Barzani, who's the preeminent Iraqi Kurdish leader and someone who even some Syrian and Turkish Kurds look to as their leader. And when the AKP came to power, one of the things they did was elevate the relationship with the Iraqi Kurds, which until then had been more of a security relationship between the Turkish military, Turkish intelligence, and the Iraqi Kurds. He elevated it to a diplomatic and a very deep economic relationship. And so in 2010, Turkey opened its first consulate in Erbil, which is the capital of the Kurdistan region of Iraq, and signed this multi-million dollar deal with the Iraqi Kurds for Iraqi Kurdistan to export its oil through a purpose-built pipeline independently of Baghdad through Turkey to foreign markets. And it's the sale of that oil that has allowed Iraqi Kurdistan, Erbil, to become what some people call a poor man's Dubai. It had an incredible impact in terms of the amount of income this generated. And in exchange, many Turkish companies were given contracts to build in Erbil. So if you look at the skyline, you'll see all these skyscrapers, and most of them will have been erected by Turkish companies. Turkish companies are also involved in the oil energy sector there. So there's also the very close security relationship, one where basically the KDP oversees Turkey's military operations against the Kurdistan Workers Party, the PKK, which is based in Iraqi Kurdistan. Its top commanders are based in Iraqi Kurdistan in a place called Kandil, a mountain range that straddles Iraq and Iran. They also have bases further west and all the way to the Syrian border. And over the past few years, and certainly this year, we've seen a very sharp escalation in Turkish military activity in Iraqi Kurdistan against the PKK. And of course, this has a hugely destabilizing effect because it's caused mass displacement of civilians, and civilians die. And obviously, the people are quite unhappy and they don't like to see their fellow Kurds being killed. But at the same time, if you speak privately to KDP officials, they will tell you that, in fact, they say quite publicly that they don't want the PKK around. And when I say the KDP, I'm sorry, I should explain. The KDP is the Kurdistan Democratic Party of Iraq, and it's the most powerful party in the Kurdish region and led by the Barzani family. And they are the ones who cooperate so closely with Turkey. They also feel threatened by the KDP, so they're not actually that displeased to see Turkey, especially with its drones now, picking off all of these PKK cadres. So that's kind of what the relationship looks like.
Amber, and to wrap up, you mentioned how there are going to be talks next week between Turkey and Egypt. We have these calls between Turkey and the United Arab Emirates. Where do you see these going in the near future?
I think there will be a sustained effort to bring these talks to fruition because Turkey is feeling very isolated. Economically, it's suffering as a result of this froideur with these two countries, and also very keen also to fix relationship with Israel, though, of course, the recent bloodletting in Gaza has given pause to that for now. But we'll resume. And at the same time, something that doesn't get much attention in the media is that Turkey is also looking to establish diplomatic relations with Armenia and to open its sealed borders with Armenia. The border has been shut since 1993, and Turkey helped Azerbaijan win this war against Armenia in November, October of last year. Very painful for Armenia. They lost not only the territories they'd occupied around this contested mountainous enclave that's majority Armenian called Nagorno-Karabakh, but they also lost actual parts of Nagorno-Karabakh. And Turkey was instrumental in helping tip the balance in favor of Azerbaijan. Yet now you hear the prime minister of Armenia, who was bitterly criticized, by the way, for his conduct of the war, and yet was reelected, talking about also wanting to make peace with Turkey. So it's not just the Middle East.
Amberin, thanks for joining us. It's always great speaking with you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
In other news, Europe's top human rights body on Friday called on Greece's parliament to withdraw articles included in draft legislation that would impose heavy penalties on NGOs that carry out unsanctioned rescue operations of migrants at sea. The Council of Europe's Human Rights Commissioner said the proposed changes would seriously hinder the life-saving work carried out by NGOs. Greece's current government has toughened border controls since taking office and has promised additional restrictions in response to the ongoing crisis in Afghanistan. Earlier this week, Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis expressed support for an EU decision to seek cooperation with countries in the region to prevent illegal migration from Afghanistan. Finally, meteorologists in Cyprus said that August was the island's hottest month since the recording of temperatures began 38 years ago. The Meteorological Department of Cyprus said the average high temperature last month was 39.8 degrees Celsius or 103.6 degrees Fahrenheit, eclipsing the previous record of 39.7 degrees Celsius or 103.5 degrees Fahrenheit, set in July 2020. In July, Cyprus also suffered what authorities called its most destructive wildfire in many decades. Environment Minister Kostas Katis said the East Mediterranean is now considered a global climate change hotspot, with biodiversity and forest ecosystems that are intensely negatively impacted. U.S. weather officials previously announced that July was the hottest month on Earth in 142 years of record keeping. That wraps up today's episode of The Greek Current. Thanks for tuning in.